And then in about 2 weeks, we'll have this posted on our website, boardoptions.com, and you can download it. Let me introduce the writer of the case, Josh Shernan. Josh is a partner with the Business Improvement Group. He's a consultant to manufacturers. Josh has more than 30 years of manufacturing and operations leadership experience in the United States and Europe. Josh has a BA in economics from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and an MBA from Harvard Business School. So welcome. Josh is going to be the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go around the rooms and kind of get a sense of what did you think about the case and what would you do if you were in this case? We'll start with Bill, Brian, Jim, and Vivek. Do you have a
Yes.
spokesperson?
Yes, I am the spokesperson in our group. Thank you. So we had a really great, robust conversation, and I know there are four sort of outstanding questions, and I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit. So first and foremost, is that the business has to change, right? That's fundamental to the long-term viability of the organization. So along that line, we would recommend bringing in somebody like a John Kane, somebody who has the experience of implementing change, and he knows the details of the problems and he knows the fixes. So don't know if John Kane is interested in the job, but somebody like a John Kane really needs to be brought in into that function. Eric has issues. He's not the right manager. He doesn't have the buy-in of his people. There are temper issues. He's not the person to make this change to the organization. So that's what we would recommend there. Or other than the organizational structure, that would be the only change. Swap out that COO role. Next, what would the stance be with the bank? A continued partnership. The bank has a vested interest in the company's success. And if they don't feel comfortable with the way the organization's being run, they're going to call the loan. So that relationship needs to be intact and moving forward. In terms of the board structure and governance, so a lot of conversation again around bringing in new talent to the boardroom. The perception, because this is a family generational business, is that these board members are on the board with a silver spoon in their mouth, right? They are entitled to being on the board because they are shareholders of the company. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're qualified people to solve the problem. So there needs to be a change in the dynamics of the board structure. And to somehow bring in or rebalance the board where you've got new board members with better skills, business acumen, board skills to help this company move forward. As a family member, I think you're at a crossroads. If you don't change, your business might not survive. So I think that's the reality for both families that they have to face. And if they do nothing, which is always an option, they run the risk of losing the business.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill. Anybody else on the team have any comments? Okay, great. Thank you. Our next group would be Jay Lee, Josh, Mindy, and Stefan.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Gia. I am the reporter from our group. So we had a very robust discussion with Mindy, and Josh provided a lot of great ideas. In terms of the restructuring of the company leadership, we totally agree with.
J Lee, I can't hear you. I'm having trouble hearing you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah. So sorry about that. So we had a very robust discussion. So Josh and Mindy brought up a lot of great ideas. In principle, we agree with
Excuse
what
me,
Bill.
G, that was Stephen and Mindy. I didn't say a word.
Oh,
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, Stephen. Josh was trying to keep his, sort of lips tight so that we're not given any unfair then. Well, it's not a competition. It's a discussion anyways. So we very much are on the same page with Bill. We feel that it's important to restructure the company leadership, in particular to have a very capable CEO to lead through the lead the company through restructuring. The board needs significant restructuring because many of the family members do not have the expertise. So, and I think that, so we believe that James Smith will play a very critical role here in terms of convincing the existing board members to resign in order to save the company. Because if they don't take any action right now, the company could become a zero if the loan, if the, the bank starts to recall the loans. Since Jane is very much trusted by both companies, she and the chairman and John Cain, the outside consultant, should immediately call a meeting with the bank, basically talking through the bank. This is the, you know, we're going through some changes, identify the cost cutting that John Cain has identified, and to provide some kind of reassurance to the bank that with these changes, we're going to cut the cost, cut the losses, and here's the repay plan to the bank so that the bank would not recall the loan immediately. So that is the only addition we have, in addition to everything that Bill has just so eloquently talked about. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group is Amita, Jessica, Marianne, and Mitchell.
Right. I took on the role as a spokesperson for our group, and we had a very lively discussion as well. And much of what has already been said, we noted too. We looked at the situation. There are really two primary existential challenges facing the company. There is the immediate existential issue that the bank has now threatened to call the loan within 90 days. And then there is the longer term existential issue that the company's product line is a commodity product line, and their ability to compete is driven apparently solely by pricing. Even though the case noted that the company has very good technology and has notes that it has a good ability to adapt to market changes. And so that's a real positive. We felt that, Jane Smith, she apparently has credibility with the current board as it's currently comprised. And the first thing she ought to be doing is at this board meeting is teeing up John Cain, because John Cain is both a representative of Reed Capital and therefore a representative of the bank. And the bank calling the loan would clearly be the demise of the company, we assume. That appears to be the circumstance that's being represented. And John, clearly came in, and there were changes that he recommended, first with respect to the balance sheet and the financial situation, but also even more germane operationally, that there are things that could be done, and he laid them out very specifically. He assigned tasks and names and dates, and they weren't implemented. And you can understand Eric's situation. Eric is head of operations, and somebody comes in and he spends a day or two and very clearly lays out tasks to be done that could result in turning operations around at least sufficiently to turn the situations around enough that the bank wouldn't be calling the loan. And human nature being what it is, Eric apparently was not inclined to do that and acknowledge that, you know, he had failed in terms of operations. We think that bringing someone in, as other people have noted, is the right thing to do. It might be difficult in the short term to find that person if John Cain is not willing to make himself available to do that on a short-term basis, then maybe David is the right person. He certainly has embraced a willingness to do that. He didn't think he had the authority to do that, but maybe he could be given that authority. And maybe he could have that authority with John Cain's oversight. Eric may not like that, but under the short-term existential circumstances that exist, it's something that might have to be implemented. It's important to note that Eric has this temper issue, and that just increases the maybe the immediacy of addressing that. But that has to be done. As far as long term, we already acknowledge that the company should bring in maybe Jerry and his deceased partner. Maybe it's time for a passing of the baton. If David is not ready for that, then to bring in a new senior executive to drive the long-term prospects of the company, given their technology and their ability to adapt. And then we completely agree that it's time to talk to the family and explain the need to bring in or to replace members of the board with independent directors with appropriate skill sets. I think that pretty much sums up our discussion.
Okay, thank you. Next group is Ben, Craig, John Ela, and John Morgan.
So I'll be the spokesman for our group. We also had a lively discussion. It seems that so far most of the groups have viewed the case the same way with similar type of outcomes. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
And we think that the bank has given an excessive amount of runway, and their patience must be a lot shorter than the case kind of indicates, which is probably part of the whole denial that the family's been in about the business, because it's always been there, and clearly resistance to change as the market has changed. So I think going to the bank is very important, but at this point, we need to go to the bank with a clear plan of how we're going to make the needed changes, what they are, why they're needed, and acknowledge in that plan why it hasn't worked so far and what we're going to do different. And that really gets into the organizational structure. Eric has proven incapable of doing what needs to be done, both in allowing the company to lose money for 42 months, and also when given very strict directions on what could be done to fix it, which is all operational improvement. It sounded to me largely like lean manufacturing approaches. That would at least get the company stabilized. And they need to get into different products and markets given how the market has changed, but they really can't do that if they're sinking fast. So they've got to stabilize it from an operational point of view. Eric can't do that, so we need either a outside consultant, someone like the author of the case, or perhaps a outside CEO with strong operational background. But it's got to be somebody with strong authority to just come in and make these changes happen. That means that Eric probably is out, or at least severely demoted. Compensation cut. He's paid more than anybody else, probably because he has the title president, even though he's not doing that job, and so not doing it effectively. Then the consultant or the CEO, whoever is going to be, needs to be offering a report to the bank on the progress actually being made and the resulting financial improvements probably weekly or biweekly, as this to really negotiating all the time to get more runway because of how short the patience of a bank should be at this point in time. And then the board structure, as everybody else has noted, the board's adding very little value here. And we'd recommend that they convert to an outside controlled board, whether some of the family members, because they've been receiving comp for so long, need to have some kind of a minor consulting role, or at least consulting compensation, but probably have a family member from each side be elected to be on the board, and then maybe three outsiders. They need enough help that I might say that it should be a board of seven, with adding in another outside member and adding in the CPA. Although personally, I don't think a CPA who's doing the audit should be on the board, but that's a whole nother topic. The role the CPA could play, as has already been noted, is as the negotiator to help them all see what has to be done to save the company. And someone on our team made it very clear that the only way this is going to happen is that the fear of God and losing everything can be instilled in the family members so they can get out of the way. Anything I left out, anybody else on our team want to throw in?
Thank you, John. Our last group is Chris, Ed, and Susan.
Hi, I am the spokesperson today, and very common themes here. Clearly in default, maybe not financial default at this point, but they've blown a couple of covenants, which means they're in default. Jane Smith needs to speak up as the independent director. Eric is not executing and needs to be moved out of the role. Again, very similar themes here that we've all talked about. Hopefully John Kane will step in at her behest on behalf of the board and do the work and get things back on track. A couple of things that are different that we talked about. One option is to perhaps bring in an outside investor, which would mean other additional outside board members, or possibly sell part or all of the business. For certain, bring in one or two additional independent directors and reduce the number of family directors, as some a couple of you have already suggested. Make the board an odd number, not an even number. And then one thing that we, on a financial perspective, that we didn't talk about as a group, but I thought about afterward, is ask to give the, because you're going to have to meet with the bank, and as everybody said, sit down with the bank, go through what the plan is, get this thing turned around, but also have the family members put in some, either some additional equity on their own or subordinated debt to indicate that they are, that the support, putting the subordinated debt in would likely get the company out of default with the whatever covenants they've blown. So that's a possibility, again, showing that they really care about the company and they really want to save the company. And then longer term, each one of you has talked about sort of the longer term strategy, perhaps bring in some outside people to run the company or at least be in more senior positions. So that is not to repeat everything that everybody else has said, but that's bottom line what we talked about.
Thank you, Susan. Now I'd like to turn it over to Josh to sort of comment on the comments that you have made and in his perspective, having been involved in a situation like this. Josh?
Well, thank you. Very interesting comments, very much in line with my thoughts. In case you haven't picked up on it, I was playing the part of John Kane in this case study. The rest of the names were changed to protect the innocent.
And the guilty.
These turnarounds can get very wacky very fast. And one of the problems that you face when you're asked to come in is there are so many stakeholders, each with their own agenda. You've got two families that are in their fourth generation that have a lot of psychic value built into the business, as well as a financial stake. You've got an investment bank, which has its agenda. You have a commercial bank, which has its agenda. You've got the two C-level folks, David and Eric, with their competing agendas. The employees haven't been given a raise in 2 years. They certainly have an agenda. And even some of the suppliers. And what can happen when you step into a situation like that is that you kind of rattle around, you know, listening to one tale of woe and then the next. And you never get to the point at which you say, look, this is what needs to be done. And I got some very good advice from people who have been in these situations that I ought to do that and let the chips fly. That's not to say you ignore the stakeholders. You always talk with them. You always explain your thinking. But at some point, you have to either march right or march left. So I showed up on a Monday. By Thursday or so, I had committed to putting a plan on paper by the end of the following week. And part of that plan, as many of you mentioned, was to talk with the bank and present the plan and say, here's how we're going to dig our way out of this. I never got the chance to do that because the very next day, Friday of the first week, the bank called the loan. I then called my sponsor, which was the investment bank. They were the ones who had brought me in. And I said, look, find us another commercial bank. That's your job. I'll appear as a character witness to any that are interested and explain what the plan is. The plan itself operationally was relatively straightforward. I had spent almost all of my time the first week and a half on the floor of the plant, just wandering around and at times spending several hours at a whack with the frontline supervisor, the production supervisor. I've learned to do that because if you want to know what's going wrong, just attach yourself to that person, because all the crap that happens in a plant, broken machines and late material and Billy Bob called out sick and we can't find a tool and whatever it is, always winds up in that person's lap. So that's a great vantage point to figure out, you know, very quickly what's going on. And I identified four opportunities for improvement, none of which required a great deal of capital expenditure. I'll tell you about them, three of them briefly and one in a little more detail. One was paper waste, which was out of control, material waste. Another one was ink waste. You're probably getting the idea they were in the printing business and they sort of were. That wasn't really the business. The third was another material waste, and the fourth was setup times. And the setup times were the interesting ones. I think it was mentioned in this case that their volume was relatively steady overall, but the composition of the volume changed. Instead of getting fewer orders for larger amounts, they were now getting more orders for smaller amounts. And it doesn't take a manufacturing genius to understand what that means in terms of how you run the floor. If a machine is running for a week or two on a single job at a time, whether it takes 2 hours, 3 hours, or 4 hours to set it up doesn't matter that much. But if a machine is running for 6 hours or 12 hours at a time and then setting up for the next job, those setup times really do matter. So this was the market. It was a failure to translate what was going on in the market into the manufacturing strategy. So I cornered in on setup times. And just to give you an example of how simple this can be sometimes, when a machine shut down, the first thing the lead operator did was run around the plant gathering tooling. all kinds of tooling, including printing plates. It took that person an hour and 15 minutes on average just to gather the tooling they needed, during which time the machine was helpfully sitting there doing nothing. That was the first thing we attacked. We gathered up all the tooling. We threw about a third of it out because it was not functional. We put the rest of it in the room. We barcoded it. We lashed it to the schedule so that when a job came out, it would tell you what tooling was needed. We bought two carts for each machine and put one guy in charge of the whole thing. Your job is to make sure that each machine has the tooling it needs before they're ready to start setting up this job. That saved an hour and 15 minutes per setup for a grand total capital expenditure of about $1,600. We did a few other things too. Long story short, we cut the setup time in half. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because all that happened in the third and fourth and fifth week and so forth. In the meantime, I got a call from the chairman of the board. He said, we're having a meeting the next day. What's your recommendation? I said, Eric, the president, needs to either be gone or to do something else. He's not up for the job. And you could see it in him. He was incredibly emotional. He was under a lot of pressure, which you can understand. A lot of it he had brought on himself. But he was ready to snap. And at one point, he actually cornered me in a room when I had said something he didn't like and screamed at me for 10 minutes while I just sat there and kind of absorbed it. So I told the chairman was Jerry Hatfield. I said, Eric needs to either go or do something else. He said, well, then who becomes the president? I said, well, David Hatfield. He's got the tools. He doesn't have the experience. He doesn't know much about operations because he had been in charge of sales. But he's got the tools. He's a much better listener, and he's much more decisive. And the people like him. And Eric couldn't say that at all. He said, but, you know, David isn't ready. And he finally got to the point. He said, we'd like you to become the president on an interim basis. And then it will become David. And I said, I get where you're going, but I don't think that's a good idea. The reason being that I wasn't going to be there forever, and David was. And I didn't want to emasculate the guy on the way out the door. I didn't want people in the organization to think that I had been calling all the shots and then I leave, hopefully, you know, they're in a better place and poor David is on a spot. I said, here's what I would suggest. Make David the president. We'll make Eric the VP of manufacturing or some title like that, since that's what he's comfortable with. But I will operate behind the scenes. I will talk privately with David and I'll say, look, this is what we're going to do. Now you go out and do it. And he finally agreed to that. I didn't really want the job to begin with. And I really was sincere in what I said, that I wanted David to be seen as the leader because he was going to become the leader. And I didn't need to be the guy out front. So essentially that's what happened. David became the president. Eric became the VP of manufacturing, but I was calling the shots behind the scenes. And I spent most of my time when I wasn't talking with David and advising him what to do, I was on the floor helping Eric make the changes because Eric had lost his credibility with the operators. So Eric would make the announcement, you know, this is what we're going to do. And then I would double and walk around and talk with all the operators and say, here's what he means. And this is why we're doing it. And this is your part in it. And this is what we need you to do.
Josh, let me interrupt just for a second. I'd like to go back to some of the recommendations the team made around board structure.
Yeah.
Specifically, John Ela. He was talking about, you know, either moving the family members outside the board or adding outside board members to the family. So John and several other people were talking about board structure. Did you or anybody else in the company restructure the board of directors?
I talked about that pretty extensively with David. They did not specifically discuss board structure at that first meeting. They had had quite enough with the organizational changes, making David the president and demoting Eric. And remember, both of them were on the board. So that was not a comfortable meeting. Although I found out after the fact that the vote had been unanimous. And it was very interesting. Eric literally voted to demote himself. And I've seen that phenomenon before. When people know they're not doing a good job and they're so stressed out by it, they're relieved when they're asked to do something else. Subsequently, there was a second meeting of the board at which they did talk about restructuring. And what they did was they decided that three of the family members, and I don't remember which ones, would leave the board. They were actually not being paid for their service as board members. They were collecting dividends. And they added four outsiders. So that accomplished two things. One is it got some outside perspective onto the board, and the other is it made it an odd number. But that was several weeks after all of this kerfluffle started.
Josh, let me go back to the outside directors. In my frame, you have true outside directors that are independent and have their own following. And then you have gray directors who are legally, quote unquote, independent, but really not independent. You know, there might be my college roommate or the partner at my CPA firm, or my neighbor, or my golfing buddy. Those are, I would call it, gray directors. They're legally independent, but they're really not. Were these people really independent?
Two of them were what you called gray.
Okay.
One of them was one of the CPAs on their outside firm. Another one was a lawyer who had done some work for them. And I was kind of surprised he even took the position, but he did. And two of them were true outsiders. We went on with our plan. The investment bank finally found another commercial bank to take the loan. I was asked to come in and present the plan. I presented the plan. I said, if you have any doubts about what's going on or any problems, call me. And in the meantime, we had also addressed the employees, and that was very tricky. We wanted to give them a sense of urgency without panicking. And so we kind of crafted a statement that we elaborated on at a meeting that tried to hit that balance. In the meantime, the reconstituted board, I don't think it had been fully reconstituted by this time, but they were on their way. Had met, they had adjusted the salaries to reflect the new responsibilities, and we started knocking off those four projects one by one. It took about 3 months, I guess, altogether. And it made the difference between losing $1 million a year and making $1 million a year. The other thing that I put into place, because there were plenty of other projects to do, and I feel really strongly about this, every company should have a standard way of managing projects. If you have a dozen different projects going on in a company and a dozen different project leaders doing it a dozen different ways, everyone's going to get confused. So we put together a standard project plan template, a standard timeline, and a standard Gantt chart. And in each project plan, it was down to the nitty-gritty details of who's responsible and who's on a team, what's the due date, what resources do you need, what's the current status, and it was all color-coded, red, yellow, green. That eventually got them to the point, by the time I had left, they were on a monthly basis, they were tracking toward making $1 million a year. I kind of pulled back at that point. I had a weekly meeting with David, the new president. We continued to push new projects, but I wasn't active on a day-to-day basis anymore. They got the earnings up to about $1.6 million. And then about a year after that, they were approached by a private equity firm that was doing a roll-up in their industry and was interested in buying them. And it was apparent to me that this was, both of the families were in the mood to sell. It's a very, very tough business, this business they were in. It's very difficult to make a buck. And if you're making a profit, you're doing well. So I said, my recommendation is at least listen to them. And they did, and they came back with a price that was in excess of what I would have paid. Let's put it that way. It was a handsome price. It made sense in one respect, and that is, in an industry like that, if you can roll up a bunch of competitors, you might finally get some pricing power over your customers where none of the competitors had any power at the time. And they accepted the offer. Eric subsequently was shown the door by the private equity firm, but they gave him a generous severance. And David went on to run the company as a division of a larger company. And I talked to him about 6 months ago, and they're doing well. You're on mute, Larry.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for that overview. Let me open the floor. Does anybody have any questions, comments, concerns, any issues to ask Josh? Anybody? Just please raise your hand so I can see. Anybody? No? Very, very interesting. John, I'd like to turn the conversation to you because you've involved John Ela. John Ela has involved me in two family businesses where there is dysfunction at the board level. And in one of those businesses, the mother actually owns like 90% of the shares, and she structured the board in an interesting way. You know, John, you want to talk about that and what you think was it successful, not successful? And then if you could talk about that other company in New Hampshire, because they did it completely different. They did it completely different way.
Both of those companies have five generation two. One's active in the, all five are active in the business, and the other only one is. The first one where the mother was involved, I was the chair of the first outside board they'd ever had. And I did that for 6 years, stayed on for another year, and just rolled off at the end of 2024. That was set up so that the siblings who were at war with each other had to elect two of them to be on the board with three outsiders. And that meant that the two had to behave somewhat well in order to be elected again. And that helped quite a bit. But that interference with entitlement, I guess I could call it, only lasted for the first year. And one insisted that he be back on the board because he couldn't stand to tell peers he wasn't on the board. And rather than everybody else resisting that, they said, well, if he's going to be on the board, I want to be on the board. So all the shareholders went back on the board, including the mother. And we structured that change so that the outside directors still had control because they were given two votes. So three outsiders had two votes each, and the insider, six of them, had one vote, and a tie went to the side with the most independent directors.
Again, just for people's perspectives, these brothers and sisters were so dysfunctional, the mother disinvited them from her Christmas party because they couldn't be together in a room over Christmas.
I should have mentioned, I neglected to, that at the beginning of that board meeting where it was decided that David would become president and Eric would be demoted, Jerry Hatfield got up and put the fear of God in everybody and said, if we don't fix this thing real quick, we're going to lose the whole thing. And the pivotal moment, I was told, was when Jane got up and said the same thing. Like, it's time to get serious. And that was when they got serious.
Yeah.
The other company in New Hampshire was one where Dad didn't trust the kids with money, so he paid no dividends and kept cash in the company. The company was doing quite well and continues to do quite well. But as he worked on his estate plan, he gave 98% of the stock to the kids, but made it all non-voting and kept 2% of all the voting in his own trust. And after he passed, the trustees continued to operate that way. That led to 15 years of litigation and a final settlement before it was going to the Supreme Court. I came in after it was settled because part of the settlement was they would create a committee of business advisors that would be between the board of directors, which was made up by the president of the company and the president's two direct reports. One was a family member, but she was fairly passive in it. So it was really the management against the shareholders. And so this committee of business advisors was created to vote for the trustees of the kids' trusts. And so we really had control. And we then spent quite a bit of time trying to come up with a charter clarifying roles and responsibilities because the settlement had outlined that pretty specifically, except that it wasn't consistent with New Hampshire state law as far as the role of shareholders and boards, and it wasn't consistent with New Hampshire trust law. So we had all sorts of things we had to figure out. I learned there were 18 law firms between New Hampshire and Massachusetts that I couldn't hire an attorney for our committee because they were all conflicted out. And 2 years after that all started, we've got close to a charter everybody's agreeing to. And now I'm starting to work on moving towards restructuring the board and getting independent control. And we brought in two CEOs over that time. One that I was on a search committee to look for a new CEO because one had retired and there was an interim CEO and should he be the one or not. And the two committee of business advisors members on the search committee, along with their head of HR, came up with two. And she insisted we added in the third, who was the interim. And of course, they went with the interim, and that he realized he was way in over his head. And so we've got somebody good in there now, and it's on its way.
That sounds like the Jamoulis family when it was in Massachusetts in the 90s. Yes. Every law firm in Boston was working on it. It was crazy.
By the way, that well.
We had a special program on the Market Basket case.
Right.
a couple of months ago. If you go to boardoptions.com, go from ideas to action, you can see the market basket case. We celebrated the 10th anniversary of that case.
Right, right. It was unbelievable.
Anybody else have any comments, questions, issues about this case? Because it's very, you know, I love how you presented it, Josh, and you really got into the details. And that's great. So thank you very much.
I think one of the things that sounded like, it sounded like everybody knew they were going to have to do something, but it was only until the person, the I forget the guy's name, when I said, Jerry, I guess, said, we've got to do something, and that otherwise there's no business. I mean, they were dancing around it for a long time.
You know, I found that question, if things keep going the way they are and there's no change, what's going to happen, gets to the heart of the matter. Because if the answer is, we'll go bankrupt, and then if you go bankrupt, then what happens to you? Well, then I will be tarred and feathered because of my association with this. Nobody's going to hire me. I won't be able to pay the mortgage. I won't be able to retire. Fine. So now we know what we're dealing with. If on the other hand, if this things keep going and there's no change, what's going to happen? We'll go bankrupt and I'll just retire to Nantucket and live in my father's house and play golf every day. Okay. So I find that question gets deep into what are we really dealing here with?
Yeah, that was a big chunk of the problem. They hadn't really resolved to take action, partly because they were spending so much time fighting each other. But part of it also was they didn't know what to do. All of these people had grown up in the business and they almost didn't know what they were looking at anymore. They were so familiar with it. As an outsider, it was much easier for me to come in and say, wait a minute, you're spending an hour and 15 minutes gathering tooling while the machine is sitting there, you know?
Right.
But that was the way it had always been done.
Right. I want to thank you, Josh. I want to thank you all for participating. Okay. We will have a program next month, and you'll be getting notices about it next week. So thank you all. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Josh.